All right, so here we are on our last night of the chakra class. And it's interesting, I had some dread about doing this class, as you all know, because I wasn't sure that it wouldn't be just doing it such an injustice. But I think in the end, it's been a very, we've been able to cover enough. I think Connie really did a superb job. And so it felt like not just her repeating what I did, but in fact, twice as many hours. Or at least I'm justifying it that way. We're going to talk about the fifth and sixth chakra tonight, but not really, I mean, a little bit. We'll talk about them. And then I'd like to leave a lot of time for questions and that kind of discussion. It's often the best way to talk about all of this. So if you have questions, tonight would be the night. I wanted to start first, though, by just responding. Last week, Rajalakshmi asked the question right at the end of class about where does all of the energy come from in people who are obviously very energetic, people with high energy. And I think the answer that I gave was a reasonable answer. I mean, really talking in about plugging into the ultimate source of all energy, and that the more we practice, the more energy flows through us, and that's just simple, or we become aware of the fact that we are pure energy. It's probably a better way to say it, and that's all accurate, and I'm not sorry that I said that. But I realized as this past Sunday I gave the Sunday sermon here, and I had a very interesting experience with it. How many of you were at Sunday service? So it's online. Yeah, so it came to me very quickly as I started thinking about the reading, which was, what is the best way to worship? That was the question that was being asked. And I had this immediate thought in my mind that the best way to worship is all with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, which is, of course, that line which is often referred to in the Bible as the most important commandment, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy mind, with all thy soul, and with all thy strength. And we say it every single week in our meeting, in our Festival of Light at the end of service. And then I realized that if I reversed the order, and if I talked about it, mind, strength, heart, and soul, that it was following the path of the chakras. And then I realized that that's the best way to worship, is to really plug into each of us our own pilgrimage that we're taking, going through these chakras. Because as we all know, and as we've been saying, the very nature of the chakras is the energetic manifestation of that part of the infinite soul that is us. There can never be two people who have the same set of chakras, who have the same energy, the same path that they need to follow. It's just virtually impossible by definition. That's what this jiva, this piece of infinite consciousness that has been identified with this body, every single one is unique. And I realized, thinking about that later, that it is, and I said this on Sunday in some way, I don't remember what I said at all, but I think I spoke about the importance of finding your own path and then getting on it, I mean, and sticking to it. It's not that you can just decide to do anything in the world you want, but assuming that you remember and are committed to walking a spiritual path, that every single human being is going to have their own path to walk, and the walking of that path is the best way to worship for you. That's what it is. And I realized, Rajalakshmi, when I was thinking about the answer that I gave you last week, as I was thinking about it again, it was certainly not a glib answer. It was a very good thing to say and all the truth. But it's not helpful if that's not where you are. You know, so to say, just meditate more, just do more affirmation, just whatever it is, those are, in fact, all of the ways to go about neutralizing energy in these chakras. So it's not that any of that is wrong, But the other truth about it is that we're all on our own path, and not everybody comes in with the destiny in this life to have a lot of energy. That's just simply the truth. That should not be an excuse to get lazy. That's not what I'm talking about. But the absolute truth is, as you were pointing out, I came in like that. I've been able to live in 3 and 4 hours sleep a night my whole life and perform well. And I watch people who, and I don't take any credit for that. It's just, you know, it's how I'm being used in this life. It's what the story is. And I watch other people, if they have one night of 5 hours sleep, they're literally sick. It makes them sick. So for any of those people to try and live my life would be absurd, just like for me to try and live their life and however they're accomplishing things would be. So it is essential to really be paying attention, to tune in. Meditation is actually tuning in. It's quintessentially tuning in, really. But to really tune into who am I, just to be able to take an honest look and to decide consciously and energetically and through spiritual practice, where do I need to be working? How can I help myself? And that just looks like all different things. So when somebody says to me, as men often do, I mean very often, how do you open your heart? And I know that what they're asking me, I know this for sure most of the time, is, and this is not exclusively for men, but it's a male thing. So there are women, we probably all know women, who are just do not have their hearts open. But it does occur more often in men. I think that's why men come in male bodies this time, is to practice this a little bit. But what people often want is the formula. They just want an answer that makes logical sense to them. That's what they want. You tell me how to open my heart, and then I'm going to go out and do that. That you tell me. And of course, that's not how it happens. The answer, the true answer, doesn't appeal to the mind. And so they can sit with me time after time. It happens frequently, saying, but I'm waiting for you to tell me. And then I'll say, I have been telling you. I mean, for weeks or years or months, you know, because it's the truth. And just like a few weeks ago I alluded to, when people talk to me about that, about wanting to make spiritual progress, the answer that you give them is not, it cannot be an answer that makes, that appeals to the mind. Because what we're all talking about with all of this is stuff that's beyond mind. So the answer to, how do I open my heart? I mean, I could say to somebody, wear green, let's try and figure out what the right flower essence is, start practicing kindness with people, let's get you an affirmation or two. I mean, there's many, many things that we could talk about, you know, about how one practices opening one's heart. How about just better posture? You know, there's so many things that we could say, and those are the truth. So there's no other answer to give, no matter how frustrated people get, no matter how much money they're willing to pay for it. The answer is so much more subtle than the mind that's asking the question. Am I saying this well enough? Okay. So our job is not to try and be ever like anybody else. That just makes no sense ever. Our job in this life as spiritual aspirants is to figure out how to be the best version of us that we can be. In the end, which we get to here between the fifth and sixth chakras, the answer to the question, or the question is always, am I moving? Am I thinking? Am I behaving in ways that are taking me closer to God or away from God? Am I moving towards my ego-centered self or my divinely centered self? Is what I'm doing feeling expansive or contractive? Is it fear-based or is it divinely love-based? And it doesn't matter where you are on the path, which is from here to here. It doesn't matter. The whole point is to just keep the energy moving and flowing. And as long as we're doing that, then we're having a very successful life spiritually. If we get, and of course, everything happens to stop us, everything. So some people, just their physical body won't allow them to do a lot. It just won't. Now, of course, everything's karma. Nothing in the whole universe can happen that's not karma. So yes, that's karma. And are there ways for people to try and get well that don't look like the norm? They don't look like a pill or even a diet or even an exercise program or the next homeopath or the next energy healer or whatever way you want to go. There, whatever way you're going out into the world, there are ways of coming inside. And I've watched people move from being incredibly inhibited by their body, physical problems, or by their mind, psychological and emotional problems, and transcending all of that. It's always possible to be well, but it's not, we shouldn't beat ourselves up if we don't get there. This is a very fine line. You know, it's interesting, Nyaswami Jyotish, who most of you know, and you've heard me talk about him, and he was named the, Swamiji named him as his spiritual successor. And he and his wife, Devi, Nyaswami Devi, together, they're co-directors of all of Ananda Worldwide. These are, anyway, I've mentioned them many times, and I will mention one more time that they'll be here in 2 weeks, and you shouldn't miss them on Saturday night or Sunday. But anyway, he started painting just not that many years ago. He just decided to start painting, and he had some little bit of an art background. I asked him one time to tell me all about it, because everybody always says, oh, anybody can paint. You just have to believe you can paint, and you can paint. Well, my belief hasn't gone that deep yet. I am not a painter, but his work is actually really very good. It's clearly inspired to some degree, but he also did have some technical background. I mean, he's learned some things about art. But there's a calendar, and I don't know how I got it or where it's available. Maybe it was printed in India, I'm not sure. It's a little stand-up calendar with a different painting of his on it for each month. So it's on my desk at home, and so every day I look at this painting of the month. So the May painting is a painting of a mountain that comes to a very precipitous peak. And on this side, there's all this yellow, beautiful golden light, and over here it's darker. It doesn't look menacing, like a menacing kind of darkness, but it's clearly darker. And I had no idea. It's a beautiful, beautiful painting. And I didn't know what was in his mind, if anything, when he painted it, or if it just came out, but I've been watching it for a month, and I realized I had never written him about his painting. So I wrote him a note yesterday morning. And I said to him, I have no idea what was in your mind when you did this, but I find this painting to be so exquisite. And I said, for me, because you can see the mountains going very far back, and this tiny little, it's not really a trail, but the top of the mountain, it could be very easy to go one way or the other. You could easily imagine sliding off of this mountain. And in my mind, you could slide into the lighter, you could slide into the darker side. But as long as you've maintained your concentration, your focus, your awareness, what you are rewarded with is this utterly exquisite view that just, and it's crystal clear, and it just seems to go on forever. So I wrote him that, and he wrote me back and told me the painting came from a story he once heard. I can't even remember now. I don't want to say it because I'm not going to get it right. Exactly what it was, but it wasn't light or dark. It was a setting sun, so it was casting a shadow here and the light over here. I guess it's really not too different in a certain way. He didn't grade my response. He basically said, I'm glad you liked it, but why it's coming up tonight is because I think that is what the spiritual path is for most of us. It's a very kind of fine line that we need to walk and to pay attention to, because it is easy to become just the least bit unconscious, means drifting downward over here, and slip into habits. And those habits happen to be a lot of what we call, if these chakras are imbalanced and you become a little controlling in the world, or you just can never make up your mind about anything, you know, or on and on. I mean, we've gone through them a lot. What happens when the chakra is vibrating a little more coarsely and energy's not flowing through it? All of those qualities. Well, when you say them in a class, you sound like, okay, I'm going to be careful not to be X, Y, and Z. But in life, they're subtle. They grab you. You don't know before you know it. You know, it's like if you have a habit of biting your nails. You don't even know you're doing it till all of a sudden you have no nails on your fingers. You know, it's just, and then you realize, oh, I got to quit biting my nails. You know, when I was growing up, we used to put something horrible tasting on kids' nails. That's what they used to do. How horrible. But I used to bite my nails when I was a very little girl, and then I would say to myself, sit on your hands, sit on them all the time, because it was impossible to just live and not find my fingers in my mouth. That's the way life is, in a way. It's just, it's subtle like that. So it's challenging. It really, that's what we were talking about with the third chakra. It takes enormous willpower. And well, really, it takes everything, doesn't it? It takes a steadfast commitment, kind of stick-to-itiveness. It means being able to be very flexible and go with the flow, but not lose yourself. In order to do that, you have to have the first and second chakra. In order, then you have to bring in this power. Because if you don't put power behind everything, what happens? You get to the third chakra, the fourth, which is air. And if you don't have a lot of power there, what's going to happen to you? You're like airy-fairy, right? I mean, it's just, you can just see how they work together. And you can see how, if you look at yourself, and if you can get an honest look at yourself, you can begin to relate them to the chakras and then focus on doing a little work there. What does that mean? Again, colors, it means affirmations. It means breathing in and out of each chakra. I've told a couple of people in my practice or in classes who have asked me, go to East West, buy it. They have a lot of different versions, artistic renditions of the chakras. And if you know where you need to work, put that thing right in front of you and breathe from your third chakra to its third chakra, just back and forth from your heart to the heart on those chakras. If you don't know, if you have no idea what's going on with you, or you feel like I said last week, remember I said, oh my God, every one of his chakras, I didn't know where to start. Everything was so out of whack. Just go through them one by one by one. If you're a Kriyabon, you do a Kri at each chakra. If you're doing Hung Sa, you focus. When you're breathing Hung Sa, you bring your awareness to the first chakra, the second, the third. Because whether we're doing it with color, whether we're doing it with sound, you can find out the note. You know, those music bowls, I mean, this is what they are. They're there to resonate with the chakras. We don't often know that because we're not sophisticated enough. They're all in a different key. They have different sounds, different tones. And people who heal with those choose what is best for you. There are so many ways to awaken the energy in our chakras. Just so many different ways. So, and every single one of those, every one of them has as its goal energetically. It's not an intentional goal because sound isn't thinking, color isn't thinking. To draw the energy up the spine, away from ego-centeredness into God-centeredness. That's the whole journey and however we do it. So this was a long other answer, but it's the essence of the spiritual path. I mean, if I didn't say anything else tonight, it would be fine. This is what we're doing. This is the way to worship. This is the way to find God, which really means getting up here, and instead of staying in the medulla, which is our ego center, drawing the energy up to the point between the eyebrows, which is what we keep saying. We don't say just draw the energy up the spine, drop it off at the medulla. No, we say come up here. We basically, this blue circle line should come all the way down and all the way up. And all the energy, we're literally formed from the medulla. we descend, if you will, into our first chakra, and then everything we're doing after that is about this ascension back up to infinite consciousness. So while the goal is always realizing our energetic potential, it is very important. You see, it's just like Master said to one of his disciples, and I can't remember who right now, when they were begging him for samadhi. And finally, he stopped. And this was one of his very highly evolved disciples. If anybody remembers, just yell the name out. But he said, could you handle it if I gave it to you? And the disciple stopped and said, no, sir. Now, I don't even know what that means. It's just to show you where I am on this scale. How would I know what I can handle or can't handle? I have no idea what that is like. But it's clearly a huge amount of energy that can actually destroy us if our chakras aren't open, if we don't have a way to just allow energy to flow freely through us. It must be like blowing a million circuits. That's what I think, really. So we have to know what we're ready for. We have to treat ourselves with compassion and with respect and always be moving, always be looking to make progress, so always be clear about that, but with the kindness and compassion that we would want to show to anybody else. That's what we need to do. So I wanted to just talk a little bit about the fifth chakra, which is this throat or cervical chakra. Obviously, it has a lot to do with speech, with sound, which is a very important chakra because the sound of Om is basically the sound of all of the energy that exists anywhere, ever. It's the sound of superconsciousness vibrating. It's the first sound that was made before everything else was formed. So it's an accumulation of all the energy that ever, that is. So it's a beautiful sound. And that's what this chakra is about. This chakra, we also talk about it in terms of being about the ways that we connect, about connectedness or a lack of it. And really, because we've moved into this element of ether now, remember the heart chakra was air, which you could see was formless, could be formless if you just let it go, but it can also be compressed. It can also take form. So it was a really big step after this fire that burned it, burned whatever the it was, everything, and transformed it into this formless place. It was a big step on our way towards super consciousness to move into the heart. And we talked a lot about, or at least briefly about the heart, and about likes and dislikes and personal human love versus divine love. So it would have to do with judgment and demand in a way. I love you if you love me. I'll love you if you do this, and if you don't, I won't. And much of that's not explicit in life. People don't often say that, but mostly it's what people mean. It's rare for any of us, rare to be loved unconditionally. I think that's why when people realize there's anybody near them who actually sees them and loves them as they are. If you've ever been lucky enough to have that experience, you feel like you're being loved in a way that you could never imagine, because it doesn't happen very often at the human level. Most of the love that comes our way has a lot of conditions on it. It's not stated that way, but it's a tacit understanding about it. There's a lot of rules. There's a lot of ways we have to behave. If we don't do them, somebody doesn't like us, or they just withdraw our energy a little bit, and we feel this all the time. And slowly but surely, we get molded into who they want us to be. It just happens. It's at such a subtle level, but it's almost always the truth, almost always. And I'm not going to take the time tonight, but I have so many stories through this practice of medicine over all of these years of my awakening to the understanding that why people wanted to come to have me take care of them medically, or what they were feeling when they were there was this extraordinary lack of judgment that they never feel, of somebody really being there for them. And of course, it's a little easier. I'm not giving myself a lot of credit. When you're the doctor and you're there with the client, way harder with your partner, gets really hard with your children or your parents or siblings. I mean, you know, the more intimate the relationship is, the harder this is, which is probably why we could learn the most about unconditional love through our partners. It's really challenging to make it with a partner in life. I mean, anybody who's ever tried knows that. Because, you know, it's like that old Ellen DeGeneres joke that I've often told. Ellen DeGeneres says, you know, when you're getting to that place in a relationship and you just know you need to leave, but you haven't left yet, slowly but surely, every single thing the person does starts getting on your nerves. And one day you find yourself sitting there and you're saying to yourself, looking at them, do you have to keep breathing like that in and out and in and out? Very funny, actually. It's very funny when you know how true it is. But, I mean, to really feel unconditional love is an extraordinary gift. And to receive it, and it's an extraordinary gift to be able to love like that. And that is what happens in the heart. And like we've been saying all for now, coming up on 4 weeks, you can only do that as you develop the chakras below it. Everything needs a foundation, or you couldn't possibly love that way if you're not feeling rooted, if you're not feeling solid, if you don't know who you are or what's happening. You just simply couldn't. So again, they're all building. But even the love of the heart, when it's not pure, you see, it's very easy. You still have the capacity in the heart to come back and have it be very personal, to have it be, again, these likes, dislikes, what I want, what I need, here's when and how I'll love you. So you're by no means out of the woods when you get to the heart. There's a lot of ways that you can slip down into the dark side of the mountain. It's just the way it is. When we move into the throat chakra, we're talking about the next level of formlessness. We're talking about connectedness. We're talking about moving into ether, which is way more nebulous than air, though Master says it is what the first vibration of energy is, ether. So there's something there. There's a vibration there, and it's not even still like we're home free. We're never really home free till we've reached samadhi. That's actually really the truth, but we just keep getting closer and closer, and I think the lines get so much more finely delineated that this is why we were saying it's harder to talk about, because now I would be talking about things I don't know about, never having been in samadhi and never having had many of these really profound experiences in my third eye. I'm speaking from hearsay in a way, or from what I've been taught or told. But the throat, this is what was so interesting last week when Connie said that the gland that's associated with the throat is the thymus gland. And that the thymus gland, you remember she said, which makes T cells, all of our T cells, they're called T lymphocytes. And they have to do with our immunity, everything to do with our immunity. And we know, and there's many things like viruses that attack them, like the AIDS virus. People get these extraordinarily low T-cell counts. They simply can't fight that infection. They can't fight any infection. There's a lot of diseases that attack the immune system. It's even more interesting when the immune system attacks you. So in a way, now not forget the medicine of it, very complicated medically. And these are called autoimmune diseases, which is what Connie said. It means that we start attacking ourselves. We eat up cells in our kidneys. Sometimes we eat up cells in our eyes. I mean, our muscle, and people get extraordinary pain or in their joints because they're attacking themselves is really what's going on. So the thymus, which is a gland that talks about self or not self, that's what those T cells do. It gets, when it's out of order, it gets confused. And you can see, because right here is the final stage of saying, am I one with all that is? Am I part of this bigger self? Or am I still my little self? And it sounds silly. It's just a gross oversimplification of it. But when we get confused or when we may be struggling, that last bit about not wanting to let go of everything we know and love about ourselves, just like Arjuna was doing at the third chakra. No, 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 he says to Krishna, can't I just please come a little bit? Can't I come part way? Can't I have you and this? You know, can't I have my cake and eat it too? No, you eat your cake, you don't have it anymore. It's gone. You cannot have both. You know, you cannot ride along with one foot in two boats. Eventually, you're going to collapse. It's just the nature of it. There's no way around it, as much as we would like to. So when we get to this thymus gland, it's we are well on our way, this very expansive and connected to all that is. That's why we talk about connectivity. Again, when it's out of whack, we can't connect very well. We find ourselves being very gossipy, very judgmental. You know, we don't speak well, we don't communicate well, we don't connect well with people. There are so many different ways that things can go awry here. When they're good, the energy then is just free to shoot right up to the point between the eyebrow. And really, once that happens, once you're in your sixth chakra, you are in tune with God's will. That's what's happened. You're there. And again, here's where it gets so subtle that I can't speak because, you know, they talk about being in samadhi, these different kinds of samadhis. When are you totally free? When do you're free, but you still have a few little things you need to take care of in a body. It's too subtle for me. I can't speak about it very clearly. But I can say that as we move into each successive chakra, that what we're moving closer towards is that state of freedom in the sixth chakra. Once the sixth chakra is wide open, then what Master says is the energy just automatically goes flying through the crown chakra. You don't have to work on anything. You don't do anything once you've come that far. So, obviously, people who, I think I told you, but maybe not, a story of a patient who I took care of for years. Somebody tell me as soon as you recognize this story. Her husband was an alcoholic, and she lived with him for years and years, and she just let his disease and him, and he got very abusive every time he drank. Not physically abusive, but he was, this lady's like an angel. I love this woman. And he would just get so verbally abusive with her. And she started seeing me years ago now. I don't know how many, but at least 4 or 5 years ago. And, you know, first we did a little bit of, like, talking. I had to get all the facts straight and, you know, a little bit of psychotherapy mixed in with spiritual coaching. There's sort of no other way to do it. But as time went on, she went down to East West and she bought a symbol of the throat chakra and she put it on and she's never taken it off. And then she bought herself an array of blue scarves, you know, just started wearing a huge amount of blue. And very interesting. It didn't take her long once she started working with the energy to start setting total limits at home. I mean, and she did it in various ways. You know, she could start off by insisting he go and stay in a hotel if he was drinking. Then she got herself a separate apartment from their big, beautiful home and said, if you drink, I'm leaving and I'm going to go stay somewhere else. But, I mean, eventually worked her way through being able to take care of herself because we realized that she wasn't expressing herself well, that she had a lot of fear of speaking her truth. It was very interesting about this woman. Let me just make sure it's fine. Yeah, it's fine. She was born into is it Seventh-day Adventists who don't believe in medicine? Who are the? I think it's Seventh-day Adventists who you're not allowed to have blood transfusions and Christian Science. Well, whatever it is, let's forget. I don't want to make a mistake. and cast aspersions on any particular religion. But let me just put it this way. In her home, if you truly could love God and be a really good little girl just like God wants you to be, you would never be sick. And she developed asthma as a young child, and she was not allowed to be treated for it. And they would just sit by her side for years while she was suffocating to death. I mean, she was miserable with her parents telling her, if you would just be better for God, and this will go away. So, I mean, so fascinating energetically, asthma and not being able to speak, and literally she was filled with the fear of God. I mean, it's just an interesting and afraid to speak up about it. You know, you just watch all of these things and how they work. And it sounds like, how could I be saying this because this is what I'm teaching? But the enormity of the truth about the chakras came to me last weekend when I was having these really inspirations about the Sunday service that I was about to give. It's like, oh my God, every little thing, you really can trace it back. It was pretty amazing hearing about the thymus gland, self or not self. It was just so incredible to me. Of course that would be the gland that would be associated with this. Of course that's what would happen. Because it's just right there where the question's being asked. Okay, last chance. What are you going to connect with here? What choices are you going to make? Are you going to send that energy right this last leg of its journey? Or are you going to hold on? Are you going to let fear take its place? It was just so clear to me when that came to me. So, let me stop there. And let me just open it up for questions. Any questions about any of the chakras or anything you've heard? Yeah. So what the thymus does is it's where it regulates T cells. T cells are the cells that fight infection and immunity. You literally can't live without them, which is why everybody was dying from AIDS. It's just this a perfect example, because that virus was attacking their T cells. So it's all about infection and immunity. The interesting piece of that is that they're also responsible when they become hyperactive, those T cells, they get out of control for various reasons, and they can turn on their host, and they turn on you. They're your T cells. Usually the things in your body don't turn on you. You know, if you try and get somebody else's liver in, your body can recognize it as foreign and react to it and basically reject it. And it's rejecting it with T cells. And we know that about transplants, but it's unusual that the body would do that to something that is its own self. You would think it could recognize it. Clearly those T cells have gotten confused about what's me and what's not me, which is exactly what's happening as we move into this state of ether. Is there really still any little egoically centered me, or am I going to be part of the whole? Is it the little self or the big self? So in essence, the same issues coming up as we move through this chakra as just exactly that little job that the T cells have to do, recognizing which self it is, foreign or part of this whole being. Does that make it any more clear? It's complicated. It is complicated. Immunology is, along with endocrinology, probably the two most complicated aspects of medicine. Maybe it just grabbed me because I'm in it. But the whole point here is that this is about connectedness. And again, we always have that choice. What are we going to connect with? And that's the real issue here. I would be careful not to... wearing green, flower essences, sound, affirmations, breathing in and out of the chakras, meditation. They're not throwaway lines. They are the answer. Yeah. I'm not making fun of you either. I'm saying you said there's got to be a lot more to it. But really, You know, for every single individual who comes to see probably Connie more than me in a kind of way, because Connie works with these natural substances, and I don't. I just simply talk to people, and I work with their energy. So it's actually, in a way, a little more difficult. I often tease Connie. I always say, you always have something to give people, which is what people want, that's not going to hurt them. If I write them a prescription, I can hurt them. Otherwise, I have to try and help them see what they need to do. But these are the things to do. I guarantee you, if anybody in this room, I mean, I'm not just speaking to you, you start a practice of meditation. You start with a simple Hung Sa. It's painful. It's really hard to get the body to sit still. You start with 5 minutes twice a day, and you stick to it. You just do it. Everything starts changing in your chakras. Everything. It doesn't matter how hard it is to sit. It doesn't matter how many times your mind wanders. The very act of sitting. I mean, I could say to you that the very act of bringing your hands in front of your heart changes significantly the energy in your heart chakra. It does. And I mean, we can prove this now with a lot of pictures that we can take that we couldn't take before. And we can photograph energy in so many different forms and ways. So, you know, it's just like that line that Joseph Goldstein coined, I'm pretty certain, many, many, many years ago, when somebody asked him a question and he just looked, you know, he's this big Western Buddhist teacher, and he said, you could just see him thinking I was there. But he said, it's just like so much of life, the answer, he said, it's really simple, but it's not easy. And that is what gets all of us. We keep thinking it's going to be this big, complicated thing that we can't get over. But I will tell you, it's not. But it doesn't make it easy. Is it easy to decide to move into a spiritual community? You know, I was living in a 10,000 square foot National Historic Landmark home with all of my furniture from Ethan Allen and, you know, whatever else, and it was gorgeous, and I loved it. Is it easy for most people to just walk away from all of that? Literally. I mean, many people, I was just having a discussion with a woman today, and we were talking about this because she, very much like me, had an experience like that, just without almost knowing why. Quit a job, sold a house, moved, didn't even know where she was going or what she was going to do. Her family thinks she's crazy. Like, oh my God, do we have to watch her? What's going on? Now, she was sitting in this office talking to me, falling in love with Ananda. We know she's not crazy. But I think I told you when I decided to give up my practice of medicine, everybody asked me when I came back from a 3-week seclusion and said, I'm giving you 6 months notice, I'm leaving. They wanted me to see a psychiatrist. And they said, don't you think you want to talk to somebody? And I said, no. They said, don't you think you need some help? And I said, absolutely not. I just got all the help I need. I was filled with inspiration. And then they would say to me, well, what are you going to do next? And I'd say, you know, I have no idea. It terrifies people. These are not easy things to do, but they're really quite simple. I mean, when I think back now, you know, and I really mean this because these are not things people in the world do. I moved out of that house. I gave 50% of what I own away. I put the rest in storage. I went back 1 year later. I called the guys in this huge 12-story storage place. I said, come here, guys. I said, take anything you want. They looked at me like, you are kidding, right? I said, nope, never been more. I didn't want anything. You know, but to the rest of the world, is that easy? How many people want to give up things? And would it have been easy if I had been asked to do it 2 years before I was ready? Would have been the hardest thing in the world. But when you see what it is, then it becomes the answer simple. Is sitting down to meditate twice a day for most people easy? Very hard. Extremely hard. To this day, I have a lot of reasons why I might not need to meditate tonight when I go home. After all, I mean, come on, I'm getting up early in the morning, I'm driving up to Ananda Village, I'm going to be meditating hours up there. Do I need to practice Kriya tonight? You know, I could talk myself out of it in a minute. So I think it's really important to understand it's not the big things that get us. It's the everyday, simple, little things in life. It's just being attached to the way we are, wanting to have our little tantrums, wanting to have our opinions, wanting to be judgmental, feeling self-righteous about it. And it is really hard to change. Of course, this is the common experience. I mean, and the concern about it is, I've been thinking a lot about this recently, in some ways what you're talking about, and then I'll specifically say what I can say about it. But I've really been taken recently by how easy it is to get pulled off course. It's just very easy. And I think I mentioned in this class about how many clients I refer to a psychotherapist and how often I lose them because they'd rather do psychotherapy where for every week for an hour somebody, it's just all about you, me, me, me. And just, you know, oh, but this person did that to me and when I was little and this happened and that. But it's so comforting for most people to talk about themselves. And it's been troubling me a little bit recently because we do that and, boy, it's so easy to have 5 years go by or then 10 years or then a life. And then you get near the end of your life and you think, wow, did I make any spiritual progress in this life at all? And yeah, many people who get further down the road and they say, yeah, but you know, I'm really getting much better about not being angry at my mother. Or, and I'm not making fun of it because I refer a lot of people to psychotherapy and psychotherapy definitely has its value, but boy, is that a slippery slope. So what I've been thinking about how easy it is to have life go by in a moment and you didn't do what you thought you wanted to do. And you have, and all of us, I mean, believe me, me too, we have reasons for it, you know, all the time. And so we can sit and look. And the thought came to me about how many times when I was younger, I was going to start my diet on Monday. I was always going to start the diet or the exercise program on Monday. I could never imagine starting it tomorrow, on Thursday, you know. Now, I could have gotten a head start and started it on Thursday, but I just couldn't. I had this order. I'm going to start fresh at the beginning of the week. Well, you know, a lot of Mondays came and went. And, I, you know, it's just the way life is. It's what happens. And that's what happens when we get there. We get really, you know, there is a conscious negative force trying to pull us down all the time. Master said, I'm not going to be able to get this quote exactly right, but I think he said something like, I used to think the devil was a figment of men's imagination, but I'm here to tell you now, I know for certain that the devil exists. Well, he still didn't tell us exactly what the devil is, and we could call the devil a lot in terms of temptation, in terms of our desire to be id-dominated, right? Our id that says, I want what I want when I want it. That's the id. That's a part of our psychological growth. And I think we have to make a commitment in whatever way we can to fight the battle, to say, I get it. Life is a battlefield. It is. This is life. But the story of the Gita is an analogy for all of life, and it is happening on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. There's no accident about that. So whatever we can do to not just notice it, say, oh, here I am again, I wish, but to really find whatever power we have and say, whatever it is, no, I'm going to fight that urge that says, don't meditate tonight when you get home. I am going to meditate. It's not easy. I mean, I know it's not easy. People struggle that way with food. People struggle that way with exercise. People struggle that way with treating somebody in their family well. You remember I told you the story of the woman who, when I said to her, go home and say 3 nice things a day to your husband. And she looked at me, she goes, now that's not going to be easy. It's like, whoever said it was easy? Go home and say 3 nice things a day to your husband. And there's not really any other answer to it except to do it. Once you get far enough away from it, and here's the pathology comes in like this, and I know this. I don't think I'm the only person that does this. Maybe none of you will recognize this at all. Because being on a diet used to be a big thing to me. I spent a lot of my life either wanting to be on a diet or on a diet. Let's say I was on a diet and I put a little sugar in my coffee or I ate one cookie. That's it. I was off. Oh, I ruined it. It's not clean. It's not pure. And it gave me permission to get lost for a month, 6 months, a year. It's not that I was thinking this. It's you just open up that little space and, you know, you're sliding. I mean, and I don't want to make it sound so morbid. I mean, the truth is the spiritual path is a joy. But you really have to work to be on it. There is just no doubt about it. You have to, that is every one of these chakras. It's not one chakra. It's all of these chakras working in tune with each other. But I'll tell you, it is really a lot about the third chakra. And I don't know how many times I think to myself about, just because I'm seeing people, I mean, I could talk about myself too. I just hope I've made it perfectly clear. We're all here. We're really all in this together, you know. But, I mean, other than the fact that, as I said on Sunday, you know, we have individualized our delusions. You know, we've made, they're perfect for us. So in that sense, we all have some different ones. But a lot of people need a lot of work with their third chakra. Just that power, that willpower, that commitment, you know. And let's face it, it's just, it's easy to get lazy. I mean, it really is. And there are very few people in the world who are going to help us. That's another thing. That's why you have to choose your company very carefully. Not that somebody's going to hold you to the fire, speaking of the third chakra, but they're going to be setting examples. They're going to be supporting you, you know. So when a friend of mine says, I'm going to do this, 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 or this, I really need to get back in on whatever, the way I'm eating, all these things, they're always the same things. Or I haven't been meditating enough. I say, good, let me support you. Or let's do it together. Or not the way when people aren't there, it's much easier for them to eat sugar if you're eating sugar. It's much easier for them to eat barbecued spare ribs if you'll share it, not if you're over here eating broccoli and potatoes. You know, it just makes it harder. So who we spend time with, because we get tempted. You know, I really felt this. I've been on this, on a path, consciously. Obviously, we're all on a spiritual path. But with great focus and devotion and consciousness since my late 20s. And I go to Mexico every year with a few friends. And these last 2 years, I've been saying to myself, you have to quit doing this. Go down to Mexico. We go to probably one of the best places in Mexico right now called Tulum. I highly recommend it for people. It's a very romantic, fun, all organic food, lots of yoga. But it's Mexico. It's very sensual. It's a lot of alcohol. You know, just the way it is. It's the Caribbean. It's probably one of the best spots on the Caribbean, but it's the Caribbean. And I could just feel myself being drawn into a different consciousness. I mentioned to Asha that I had her, I took down a lot of the Patanjali series classes. I couldn't even listen to them down there. The energy was so different. And here I am, 40 years later, just being pulled. I couldn't get myself where I wanted to be. So I just literally did tell these friends just last week, I can't go back to Mexico. We've been doing it for 25 years. Now, they're not all in favor of my saying I'm not going. But I had to say to them, I can't go back there. I don't want to be there. Environment really is stronger than will. It is. It really. Now, I didn't drink. I didn't have sex. It's not the point. The point is I could feel my energy just listing. I didn't like being there, you know? That is an excellent point with a lot of good energetic reasons behind it. What Sarah's saying is she often encourages people to not focus on what they didn't do, the mistakes they made, the ways that they're wrong. But when you see yourself moving in the right direction, doing something good, and not egoically, that's important, but to just notice it, to just open up and let that energy flow. Because having a positive thought about it will draw energy back up, and it'll get energy moving, and it'll give you energy to keep doing good things. I've told you all the story about when I was in medical school, and there was just an absurd amount of data. You just couldn't possibly learn everything. But it was terrifying because I actually thought if I didn't memorize a certain paragraph in a book that I'd kill somebody someday. I mean, that's ridiculous, but you don't know that at the beginning of medical school. You think you have to know everything, which of course you can't. And you don't even need to know a lot of it because there is, after all, the computer and ways of finding it out. But anyway, it feels that way. And one day it dawned on me, one night, that if I kept focusing on everything I didn't know and beating myself up, I was killing myself in medical school. And so I took 2 15-minute breaks a night, and I used to walk around the house. I know several of you have heard me say this. And I would pick a subject, like the Starling curve, which is how you define physiologically what happens to the heart as it contracts when the fibers stretch. I would walk around that. I know everything about the Starling curve. First the muscles, and I would just repeat everything I knew. My husband would sit there like, oh, are we in our break again? Because I would march around the house drumming up as much positive energy as I could. Then I could sit back down and study again. And I could face what I didn't know with a whole other attitude. I mean, I had no way of knowing it. It seemed silly, but it wasn't silly. It's exactly what you're saying, Sarah, which is very important. You know, the longer we spend saying, I'm no good, look what I did. You know, Master said the worst sin that we can commit is to call ourselves a sinner. Now, most of us aren't going to get up and declare ourselves sinner. But when we focus on what we're not doing right, it's that. So this is a tough balance because I'm saying, come on, guys, get strong, bring energy. This is a fight. You have to do it. On the other hand, you can't beat yourself up when you don't. Krista. You know, there are affirmations that you could do that would really help you. Master spoke so highly and strongly about affirmations. I mean, we do, you know, it's no mistake what we do every Sunday of our lives. We repeat an affirmation at Sunday service. It's part of our very worship service. I mean, it really means a lot. And if you look at that book, what's the name of our book? Here, look at this. Oh, I love it. Sometimes it just works. Why is this book even here? I don't know. Affirmations for Self-Healing. No kidding. It's just, don't you just love God? I mean, it's like props, you know. Just this book, Affirmations for Self-Healing, you will find something in here. And honestly, I've got about 5 pages of other affirmations from Master and Swami in my office. I could give anybody a copy who wanted them. But the beginning of this book is so compelling. Learning how to do the affirmations, you know, why we do them, why we pray after we do the affirmations, what in terms of affirmations, bringing our energy up and strengthening it. But if you don't find an affirmation in here, and I'm not sure, I think there is one on willpower, though, and energy, willpower, there it is. Let's see what it says. Page 40. My will is to do that which is right to do. Part all you mountains that stand in my way. Nothing can stop my progress. My will is to do that which is right to do. That means dharma. Part all you mountains that stand in my way. Nothing will stop my progress. I mean, the affirmation is like moving mountains. It's really what it's about. But there's a lot of other ones if you don't like that. And although Swami made a song to that one, right? Anyway, I could just keep going. It's like free associating on the spiritual path. But it's a great affirmation, but there's many others. I think it could really help you. I mean, because I hear what you're describing, and you, because I am beginning to get a sense of you now, would miss feeling the fire behind. But remember, it's God's power. It's not a personal power, really. So it's a well-formed, well-focused, well-directed, the power that's going to shoot that energy up so that it doesn't feel as airy. It feels even in its formless state, the power behind it, the power of all that is. So there's other ones too. But I think it's great that you can feel that and you know something's amiss. I'm being asked about to speak a little bit about how to best move forward on a spiritual path when your partner is not on the path. And the first thing I want to say about it is that every person that I've ever talked to about this, the answer is different. The approach to it is different because a lot depends on those two people, who they are, how supportive they are of each other's path and space, what's holding the relationship together. You know, what has anybody discovered about the karma? Why are you together? Do you love this person or are you just too afraid to leave? I mean, you know, there's a lot. So I want to say there's a lot that makes it very difficult to just give a pat answer. But I will say a few things. And one is that as long as you can be in the relationship and not lose spiritual ground, then everything else becomes a decision. Do I want to stay? Do I want to go? You have time and room to think about those things. If you're really devoted to your path and you're trying to live with somebody who's consciously and consistently getting in your way, then you really have to ask yourself, what do I want to be my primary goal in life? And it's a very hard question. I mean, you can feel how hard it is. You're making life decisions, not just about your life, but about somebody else's. You want to do what is dharmic and karmically correct, and it's challenging. If you're deciding to stay there right now, and there are many reasons to stay, I mean, many reasons, I would say it's essential that you create a little space that is only yours for anybody. I don't care how small that space is, but create it because you really want to change the energy there and have a place to go to. And you will feel the energy just like we do in here or in any ancient temple or wherever you are. So I would say definitely create a space and feel strong enough to make that demand in a way, though it doesn't need to be done in an ugly, demanding way, to just say, I need some of my own space and I'm going to do it. And then you have to be very strong about your sadhana. That's the first thing, so that you are meditating, chanting, meditating, doing whatever you do twice a day, because you not only have to transcend anything in you that's trying to bring you down, you have to transcend that which is the other person. And that, it is challenging. I mean, I've been there, so I'm speaking from experience, but also from all of the experience of a lot of people that I've dealt with. And then the next thing is to make sure that you spend a lot of time like this, because this will really change your energy such that it will provide some clarity about the relationship. And, you know, we can't know that ahead. You just can't know it. Today I was with a patient. I'll finish up in just a couple minutes now. I was with a patient, and he was telling me, he was trying to tell me what his life was going to be like a year down the road. And he had good reason to be thinking of it that way, except it was completely wrong. Because what we can't determine right now is what happens as we transform. It's impossible to know the impact that that has on other people, or the people around us, and which way they're going to break. Just like we have to ask ourselves, when the rubber hits the road, which way are we going to break? Are we going to break in the direction of God? Or are we going to break in the direction of the ego? This is the same question. We don't know that about other people. If we pray hard enough, if we meditate with enough focus, even if it's just a few minutes a day, if we play certain music in the house every once in a while, if we can, if we come and have enough satsang, if we make this a priority and a goal, things just start changing. They do. And you don't know who you'll be, and you don't know who your partner will be. And remember, I've told everybody this story of, now it's so many years ago, I've lost track of it, but when I realized how much a part of the problem I was in my relationship with my husband, we had both conveniently until that time blamed only him for all of the marital discord. We both agreed that he was the difficult one. And I'm saying it with a smile on my face right now, but it was really the truth. And I mean, we both agreed that. He agreed, and I certainly agreed. When I decided to, and I've said this, when I've decided to start looking at him and seeing Divine Mother looking back at me every time I looked at him, and I mean that every time, within 3 days, he started changing dramatically. I didn't tell him. I didn't put a spell on him. I changed. And as I changed, it really gave him room. But I didn't know that I was confining him. I didn't know how much judgment, blame, negativity, you know, gee, if you were just a little more of this, if you could just do this a little better, I don't know, how can I stay with you? You're not on this path, and this and that and this. My God, it's a wonder the man had no room to breathe. You know, but we just worked it out so that it looked like I was so loving. And I mean, it's simply the truth. I mean, God knows I wouldn't be making up this story about myself and sharing it with the whole world, but it's true. And as I changed, and I could just give you example after example of that. So just be where you are now. If you have to be in that relationship, or that feels right, is what I mean by have to, then you say to yourself, what can I do to make it better? What can I do to help it be more loving, more expansive, more uplifted? Because there's no sense in staying and being miserable. You get to stay and be miserable. But if you start just allowing yourself to change and see what happens, usually the answer comes in almost every life situation if we're brave enough to go with it for a little while. When we don't have clarity here, we just keep moving in the right direction, it becomes clear.